Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Away from Tigerland, a fighting fury. We're from Tigerland. In any weather, you will see us with a grin, risking head and skin. If we're behind, then never mind. We'll fight and fight and win. For we're from Tigerland.
G'day, everybody, and welcome to the grand final edition of Tiger Tragics. I never thought I would be saying that this year, but how good is this? My name is Mitchell Scott. I first of all say hello to Carl Bianco, who is with me in the studio.
G'day, Mitchell. What a time to be alive.
It's fantastic. And Tony Shebeki joins us on the line from sunny Port Douglas, where it's very balmy up there. I think that's a great omen. G'day, Shebex.
Hey, boys. How are you? I had to get away from all the hype. I was as quick as a dog last week just watching and seeing and reading all the media about Richmond and GWS Giants. So I thought grand final week's going to be worse. So I said to the family, let's go. We're heading away up far north where there won't be any AFL at all. And let's just get away from it all. So coming back Friday night.
Well, it is right. We're broadcasting here right from the very heart of Richmond here in the SEN studios, where it is officially Tiger time. There are streamers everywhere. There are posters everywhere. If you look at the front of the SEN studios here, KB's big ugly mug's been plastered everywhere saying it's Tiger time on every single window. You walk down the streets here in Richmond and there's just murals everywhere and people painting their fences yellow and black. It's a very, very special time to be a Richmond supporter. And before we sort of get into a few of the issues and go in depth, I just want to ask you guys, Carl first, what does it mean to you to have this team in a grand final?
Unbelievable. Like, I'm just ecstatic about the whole situation. If you go back to 12 months ago, I mean, I went to the extent of actually calling Finney up, just going backtracking. After we won, I called Finney up on the final so I don't have a chat to him. I was that happy about it. But we go back 12 months and no one would have even imagined that we would have been in the finals as Damien Hardwick predicted, let alone a grand final. So, I mean, we always keep the faith in Richmond and what they're able to do, but no one could have really seen us in a grand final. Like, it's unbelievable, but it's fantastic. And I'm just, as Damien Hardwick says, you got to embrace it. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm just embracing it.
It's a very easy feeling to embrace. It's foreign territory for myself. Shebex, what does it mean to you to see this mighty team, this team that we love, going to be running out there on Saturday, on the last Saturday in September?
Well, I was born 50 years ago, boys, in 1967 when Richmond beat Geelong. Went through the 70s, saw a couple of premierships as a youngster there, so don't really remember them. Was at the 1980 grand final premiership win against Collingwood, then record margin, 81 points, standing in the Ponsford stand on a couple of cans trying to watch over people.
Those were the days.
There was no seats in those days. It was just all a concrete ramp, basically. And then 82, I remember that dearly as well, or not that dearly, but the fact that we lost to Carlton. And then it's been a very long drought between then. So to have that drought broken is just, you're right. We have kept the faith, Carl. I totally agree with you. Mm. Having said that, though, I reckon 98% of the Richmond population and football population at the same time all thought, well, that's the end of Damien Hardwick last year when he said we'll make finals. As soon as he made that comment, we all thought, oh, that's it. He's put his balls on the line. He's gone. How can that happen? And look at where we are now. We're in a grand final.
What an
amazing transformation from him and this team in a 12-month period. They were pretty much done and dusted at the end of last year and looked like they were a broken side. And the work that's been done on this team over the summer and the ability to instill the confidence that they can win and the ability to still instill the confidence of a new game plan. The guys at the club might have been thinking to themselves at the time, well, hang on, we've tried a game plan that didn't work. Why is this going to be any better? So for the coach to be able to get them to believe in him and that game plan has been an amazing effort by him and the leadership team. And full credit to everyone that's played a part of it inside those walls of Punt Road.
I think everyone from President Peggy O'Neill to Brendan Gale to, you know, Neil Baum comes in to, you know, we restructured the coaching department there. Everyone deserves some sort of kudos to this. And, you know, as long-suffering Tigers supporters, I think that's almost, you know, the way you just about introduce every Tiger supporter, as long-suffering. To be in this position is... it's such foreign territory, particularly for people of our of the younger generation who, we hadn't seen really finals wins aside from, the odd one here and there, and we've broken this drought of finals wins, and now we're winning big games. This is literally territory that I had no idea how to feel about going into it. I think there was a lot of people who they sort of always dreamt of what's it going to feel like when Richmond makes it into a grand final. And, I loved on Saturday night going through the social media feeds and seeing the footage of, there's people like, Francis Leach's son, Dylan, long-suffering Tiger supporter as well, bawling his eyes out, hugging his mate. I thought personally, I thought maybe, am I going to break down crying one day when Richmond gets there? I didn't, which I was surprised at, maybe because of the nature of the game, we had so long to kind of get used to it. But it was just ecstatic, pure, unadulterated happiness, and we've been riding the wave.
The other thing is we're a little bit unlucky to the extent that we had the opportunity of living through the Bulldogs fans finally getting to a grand final and winning it last year. So because that experience has been sort of shared by the Bulldogs fans and what that was like, coming into this year, I think we all knew what to expect a little bit about having that opportunity of not being in a grand final for so long. The Bulldogs, obviously, it was a lot longer. But if the Bulldogs hadn't got there last year, this would have been absolute foreign territory for everyone. So I think we're just a little bit unlucky that we've sort of had that sort of shine or, that mystique just taken away a little bit.
Well, it's certainly something that I think we're all going to embrace here, and we're going to look at the game very shortly and look a bit last week. But first of all, the major news of this morning, recording here on a Tuesday morning, is that as we predicted, as we expected, Dustin Martin has been named the 2017 Brownlow medalist, a record 36 votes, 11 best on ground performances in that. That's also a record. No surprises. I think we were probably, in terms of Dustin winning, I think maybe we were surprised at how close Dangerfield was to him in the end, that it was only the 3 votes off, but he did have the asterisks next to it. Was anyone nervous watching the count last night as to whether they thought, oh, geez, Danger's going to finish ahead of him in the end and it's going to be like Robert Harvey all over again? Or were we all pretty comfortable that he was going to get through and be the Lone Ranger out front?
I thought that Danger might get him in regards to votes. Dustin was always going to win because of the suspension, obviously, and Danger had a fantastic year. So if he had have got him, I think, that would have been valid. I mean, we would have all accepted that, the fact that he did have such a good year. But the thing was, it was important to Dusty, and we heard in his speech, in probably what was one of the best and greatest Brownlow Medal speeches ever, unfortunately involved Bruce McAvaney, happened on a fair bit, but
it was special.
Oh, God, blimey.
He was creeping over him in those last couple of rounds. What was with that?
When he put his hand on his back, I've just said to him, don't touch him. Don't touch him. Oh, it was very strange. But anyway, Dusty got through it, and he did say in his speech that it was important to him that he at least beat Pete Dangerfield by at least a vote. So it was genuinely his Brownlow. And, it would have been interesting, actually, because we would have had then 2 Brownlows that I sort of were clouded in controversy, with, of course, Koch winning his after the handing back of Joves. And then, Dusty might have been second but still win. So it would have been interesting to see how that one played out. But, no, he won all on his own. Amazing, wasn't it? 11 best on grounds, a second best on ground, and a 1 vote as well. Is just, gee, that is just an ultimate performance, isn't it? 13 games he voted in out of 21.
And I reckon he was stiff in a couple there as well. I know Ron was talking this morning about, there was a particular game where Dangerfield had 30-odd and kicked a couple of goals and didn't poll the vote, which was, I think, round 22, I think, against Collingwood. Dusty had a couple of games there where he pulled a 32 and kicked 2 and, could have easily polled a vote against Hawthorn, for example, in round 20, didn't poll the vote. There were a couple, the umpires just caught the head of him. That's the luck of the draw, I guess, isn't it? It isn't a perfect science, being a Brownlow voter. It is how the umpires see it, and, stats aren't necessarily everything. It's all about game influence and just how they see it. Carl, can you think of a more deserving winner than Dustin Martin's performance this year of a Brownlow?
No, not really. He was the fairest and the best. Like, he's just been that far above everybody, I reckon. And look, unfortunately for Danger, he was ineligible, but he definitely demonstrated that he's second best. And then Tom Mitchell wasn't too far behind either. But they were the top three players in the competition, by far the most talked about players in the competition. You look at any article, oh, Mitchell's got 50. He got 50, I'm pretty sure, throughout the year. It was 49, 50 disposals
a couple of times. Yeah,
a couple of times. He was incredible for those efforts. Danger, obviously, being the Brownlow medalist last year and this year, fronting up the first, I believe Bruce said last night, famously, Dangerfield is the first player in AFL VFL history to poll 30-plus votes 2 years in a row consecutively. So he breaks that record, and credit to him as well for being such a great footballer and being able to do that. But Dusty, at the end of the day, 36 votes, all-time AFL VFL Brownlow votes record. And, yeah, look, congrats to Dusty. He really deserves it. And not to discredit Koch on the way he got his Brownlow, but we've actually got a Brownlow medalist that's well and truly deserved and earned their Brownlow.
Yeah. There's no question marks over it. And,
no.
You talk about foreign territory this week, and, you know, it's foreign territory for our supporters.
Yeah.
It was foreign territory for Dusty last night as well.
Exactly.
Being on the waters at a function, like, that's not Dusty's, that's not his territory. He had to get up, you know, and make a speech without having, you know, as he said in his speech, he would have preferred to have put about half a dozen beers before getting up and doing that. I did like, you mentioned his speech before, Shebex. I did like it. I felt we got to know, the more we are seeing him as he seems to be having to make a speech every week as he accepts some sort of award. We are getting to know the Dustin Martin, the Richmond players and everyone rave about a little bit more, that he is just a pretty humble, shy kid. I get the feeling that I can see why him and Dane Swan get along so well, not just because of the obvious, you know, they like a good time, but, you know, Swanee's a pretty laid-back, laconic sort of guy who, you know, but he's a larrikin. But he's an extrovert, so you know, he gets on Twitter last night. He takes over things. He's cracking gags. Swanee's happy to get up in front of a crowd and crack gags and have a bit of a good time. I reckon Dusty, there's a lot of Dusty in that as well. Except he's an introvert, so he's around a comfortable environment. He would be that sort of a person. But, you know, standing up in the front of a room in front of 800 people and, you know, millions watching on TV is not really his go. But to his credit, he got up there and, you know, gave a bit of himself. And this morning he's fronted the media again and he's just getting a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, I think, you know, God knows, he might make a Norm Smith medal speech on Saturday. Who knows?
Wouldn't that just be a fantastic effort if he did? I'll tell you what, though. Can I give three votes for best on ground?
From the Brownlow?
The Brownlow.
Yes.
Jack Fitzpatrick on the Hawthorn table.
How'd he get an invite? That's what I wanted to know. Was he someone's date?
Oh, well, he might have been Tom Mitchell's date.
Because
he kept on kissing him.
I
know Jack Fitzpatrick very, very well. I coached him as a junior at the Wyndham Vale Football Club and love the kid. He's just absolutely fantastic. But gee whiz, Jack. Oh, boy.
Well done to Jack Fitzpatrick. And as well, on a fantastic career that unfortunately has been cut short, got the most out of himself, at two football clubs who took a punt, and well done to him. The other big talking point of yesterday was the match review panel, and we were all sweating for 48 hours there on Trent Cotchin and, you know, to a lesser extent, Brandon Ellis, but certainly our captain, Trent Cotchin, and whether he was going to be eligible to play in the grand final this week. And fortunately for us, the gods seem to have shone down on Tiger time again, and he's been cleared. Were you always comfortable that he would be cleared? You know, not just on a gut feeling of, you know, they're not going to rule out a captain, but did you always feel like that it was the right decision for them to make him okay and cleared him play?
Well, can I just start at the top? To David Swartz, to Mark Allen, to anyone else at SEN or in the media that wants to change the MRP, how dare you? The MRP is working perfectly. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
I think when we're getting the results like we did yesterday, I 100% agree with you.
No, and that was a bit flippant. Look, I was a little bit concerned because you honestly do not know. What my major concern was the fact that he already had the two strikes over his head and they may have deemed it as low impact and the like with a $1,000 fine. Well, unfortunately, that carries a third strike. And he would have been out. That was my major concern. I didn't think he was going to be rubbed out for the incident, but I just thought that by proxy he may have been, had he have got just a fine. That was my worst gut feeling on the whole thing. But I thought in regards to the incident itself, I don't think it warranted weeks because they were both generally going for the ball.
And we are genuinely thrilled that that's how the MRP found. It's funny, on Saturday, I must have flip-flopped about five times on it. Saturday at half-time during the game, I finally saw a replay of it for the first time, and I went, he's going the ball, surely. Like, that's nothing to worry about. Meanwhile, some commentary around was already starting to go that, oh, look, he might be in a spot of bother. Then you see the camera angle from the other side of the ground, from the southern stand side, and you see him, and you see it in slow motion, and your heart goes in your mouth, because as you saw in that footage, he comes in, his arm sort of tucks in that little bit. You know, it all looks like it goes for about 10 minutes because of the way they slow it right down. And yes, the shoulder makes contact initially with his jaw. And then watching the replay after in standard time and standard motion, again, you sit there and go, oh, he's going straight for the ball. But then 24 hours of commentary and 1,000 replays later, and I honestly, it wouldn't have surprised me either way what they were going to do. I'm glad they found the way they did. Carl, did you have any doubts?
Well, it's funny because at halftime, I went to go get some food. And I bumped into Plough. Plough was not too far, Terry Wallace. He wasn't too far away from where I was at the game. And he said, "G'day, mate. How you going? What do you think about this?" Because it just showed on the replay screens, Koch going into Scheel. I said, "Oh, look, to be perfectly honest as well, I didn't actually see the incident live. I don't know why. I saw it, but I didn't. You know, I didn't pay too much attention to it.
I saw it live, but I didn't think anything of it either. Yeah. I didn't even know Scheel had actually gone off until about halfway through the second quarter.
Yeah. I thought he'd broken his arm.
He sort of clutched at his shoulder, didn't he?
He did the same thing a few weeks. He played in the game, the last game we played against.
Yeah, and in the last quarter, he did the same thing. He copped a stinger.
He is injury prone in the first place, Scheel. Good footballer, don't get me wrong, but he's been injury prone. So if he was to go out and claim, his arm was broken or whatever because of Cochin, I would have said that's balderdash because you actually have a history of injuries and you can't blame Cochin as the last straw. Like, he has not been 100% when he's been playing for GWS. You can back that in, right?
I tell you what I was most upset about, the fact that he came out after the MRP decision and said he felt duped by the system.
Via Choco Williams.
No, but it gets better. He came out also and he said that, I'm too concussed and it's going to prevent me from going to the Brownlow medal. Get stuffed, honestly.
Well, medical advice. I'm not one to doubt doctors.
That's seriously a joke. That coming out and saying, I'm going to miss the Brownlow medal because I'm still concussed from that knock Cochin had on me. Come on. There's boundaries.
Well, I just felt for his partner because she'd bought a dress and everything to come down and the airfares and no red carpet for you, love. So,
well, someone else would have taken her, I'm sure. But if he seriously believed that Trent Cochin was the man that concussed him, I cannot understand how he stayed on the field then for another 10 minutes.
Well, he stayed on the field. He then copped the other knock. The question, I suppose, before I do that, Carl, so what was Plough's, what did he actually think?
Plough thought he was in danger. Yeah. Plough genuinely thought, he was umming and ahhing and saying, I think he's in trouble there.
And Jared Whateley, who was kind of the godfather of all things MRP, who when it comes down to it, he breaks it down just about better than anyone else. He had his concerns as well. But yeah, as you say, he gets the knock from Cochin. He continues to play the game. He cops another knock from David Asprey at some point later in the game. Plays out the first quarter. By the end of, and by quarter time, he's rugged up and jacketed up. Now, there is I'm not going to doubt doctors who will diagnose delayed concussion because there are all sorts of forms of it. What I would say, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, is if Trent Cochin doesn't have that incident, do you think he's not playing the rest of the game? And I'm not saying he 100% contributed to it, but I would say that he must. I would say in part, it's to some point. But I don't think But the way the tribunal ruled, that didn't matter. It was all about bless the MRP for operating the way they did in this circumstance, because they didn't just look at outcome. They didn't just look at the outcome and go, player concussed, he's out, get rid of him, which we've all been complaining about all year. This is what I find funny about the whole thing. Everyone has rung in on this radio station every week going, no, get rid of the MRP, because all they do is look at the outcome and go, player X has got a concussion or player X got injured, get the player off. They all go, look at the action rather than in the outcome. In this circumstance, they looked at the action and determined that, yes, Cochin was going solely for the ball. His line was going for the ball. In the contest, yes, Scheel gets his hands on the ball first, but Cochin actually wins the ball and spills it free. And that's why they ruled. So I was thrilled that they did. Now we need that consistency for everything else. Because I suppose the question I'll pose to both of you, which was posed yesterday, if that incident happened in round... round six, do you reckon they're ruling the way they did?
I reckon he probably would have got a fine.
Yep.
If that had happened, obviously this time he would have missed out. But, it definitely wasn't warranted someone missing a grand final on.
And that's where I think there has to be that element of common sense here. Like, regardless of Richmond, and, you know, we're all, you know, beating our chest here about it because, you know, he's our captain and we love the bloke and he's been playing bloody well and should be winning the Gary Ayres medal at the end of this final series. But, you know, if that was any other player, like, I'd be in the same boat going, oh, you know, the guy's trying to go for the ball and we're going to rule him out of a grand final for it. Like, please.
For the Gary Ayres medal, who's the likely candidate?
You've got the Martins,
you've got the Cochins, you've got the Sloanes, you've got...
Well, looking at the voting from the weekend, if I just open up my email here from Patrick Keane, I don't think Cochin actually got in the best votes because, look, I think they've kept a couple of weeks of it under embargo. But looking at the release here, if it'll load up here...
Have you got the Rioli's in there?
Daniel Rioli was spectacular. We'll talk about him in just a tick. From the game on the weekend, Dustin Martin got 8 votes and Daniel Rioli got 8 votes. Trent Cochin got 7, Callan Ward 4, Alex Rance 2, and Adam Tomlinson 1. Now, off the top of my head, Dustin Martin also and Trent Cochin both also polled in the first final. And both teams no team will have played more than 3 finals, so it's a pretty level playing field for everyone in terms of the voting. So Cochin and Martin are certainly the two, I think, who are going to be pushing for it from a Richmond perspective. And from an Adelaide perspective, their game on the weekend, Charlie Cameron got 9, Rory Laird 8, Rory Sloane 4, Daniel Talia 4, Brad Crouch 3, Tom Lynch 1, Paul Seedsman 1. So a bit of a mixed bag there, but certainly two standouts from a Richmond perspective. Carl?
From what you saw on Saturday, Carl, on from Daniel Rioli, do you believe that was a third Rioli Norm Smith medal performance? That have been played in the grand final?
If that had been the grand final, I reckon you could have backed it in. That would have been certainly Norm Smith worthy. He is an absolute superstar, and it seems that he's loving football in September when it matters most. So if he can replicate that next week, I tell you what, it's going to be exciting.
Well, just before we jump into the game from last week, on Daniel Rioli, last night he wins the goal of the year. Didn't quite get the overwhelming negative reaction that Jeremy Howe not winning the mark of the year got, which was, you know, blew up social media.
Wasn't he annoyed, Jeremy Howe?
You could just see, it was like when Ralph Wiggum in The Simpsons, you could see the moment that his heart broke. It was just, and rightly so. Jeremy, look, Joe, they're all great marks, but Joe Danaher is a naturally really tall bloke with really long legs. And when he looked, this is my opinion, when he jumps high, he actually doesn't have to jump that high, and he's got a really big reach. So it's deceptive to the eye, but his marks actually look bigger than they are. Whereas Jeremy Howe, small bloke, you know, he was up 3 stories. Like that, the photos and the footage didn't do Jeremy Howe's mark justice. The issue is it's a public vote, so it's a popularity contest, and it's probably part of why, the system is what it is. And Daniel Rioli has come out in top of the goal of the year, but we have a naturally big supporter base who've probably voted him in on that, and I reckon that's the same with Essendon and Joe Danaher, that they've just had the biggest supporter base getting behind it. But Daniel Rioli's goal, for those who didn't see it, it was the round 3 goal against West Coast. It was a spectacular goal. He was up against Lance Franklin's run down the wing at Adelaide Oval, and also an Eddie Betts special from the pocket up at the Gabba. I thought it was a deserved winner. I would have been happy if Lance had won as well. I thought Lance's was really good. But, you know, Daniel's goal was, from a contest perspective, you know, he contested. People just saw, like, the last 5 seconds of it. When it actually needs to go back through a whole passage of play, he contests 2 marks. He has 3 sprint contests. He ducks and weaves around blokes. He keeps the ball in play. He does a little shimmy around someone. He does a 1-2 handball. He's then running along the boundary and throws it on his boot from an impossible angle in the wet and puts it through. It's about a 20-second play all up rather than just a little 5 seconds of putting it on the check side. And, you know, that's why we love Rioli's, because they can do things like that.
Yeah, well, we said earlier in the year, didn't we, boys? I think we all agreed that for 2017, Daniel was the better of the 2 Rioli's. Cyril obviously had a few injuries. But if he keeps going along that way, I think he's going to surpass Cyril very, very quickly.
Well, that leads us into Saturday. 4 goals from Daniel Rioli in what we'll get into the atmosphere and stuff as well. But who did you think was best on? Because it was up. Because I had the debate with people in terms of who, you know, Cochin, Martin, and Rioli are probably the 3 that you would throw up. But who did you think was the standout?
Oh, for me, it was Rioli. Yeah. I mentioned that. I think he wins the Norm Smith Medal if that performance was in the grand final, so I'll stick with that for a preliminary final, give him best on ground. I think just his ability to be able to do the things that he did at the times that he did them when they were needed were just great. I'll take nothing away from Martin and Koch, and they were spectacular as well and great contributors. But I just think from a younger guy with less experience than those two, I think what he turned on was a pretty special effort. And, for me, he was best on.
Kicked four goals in important times. Carl, what did you think? Who was best on for you?
I would have said Daniel. I honestly think he had a fantastic game. And look, you know, everyone sort of chipped in with the one percenters across the day as well. So, but for me, the standout was Dan. I think he was the difference. And Dusty, you can't go wrong with Dusty. Maybe a tad on the quieter side up until halftime, I thought, Dusty. But his second half was pretty strong and made a difference as well. So,
I agree with you, gentlemen. I thought, you know, in terms of who was the most influential of trying to get the game won for this team and hitting the scoreboard and that sort of thing, I thought it was Daniel Rioli. Kept us in it with a couple of spectacular plays and then bobbed up with, you know, in that third quarter, kicked a couple of ripping goals that just got the momentum back on our side when everything was going the right way. You know, Dustin Martin, it's interesting his game. He spent 61% time forward, which, you know, we know he does go forward in crucial stages of games. But, you know, to go 61% of time forward against a club that, you know, you thought its midfield was its absolute strength just goes to show the versatility of the team. And he kicked three goals, including, you know, the sealer late in the last quarter, or early in the last quarter, I should say. And, you know, he just keeps surprising in the way he can influence those big moments of a game.
Oh, very much so. And then you throw Trent Conchard in, just his leadership and his ability to get in and win the ball nowadays is just amazing. You back him nearly 95% of the time. You see him going into a pack, you know he's going to come out at the other end, and that's very Gary Ablett-like from Trent Conchard. The amazing thing about Dustin Martin, and I'm going to be honest with this, guys, 2 or 3 years ago, I never thought Dustin Martin was a match winner.
No, I'm with you.
He would give you a great quarter in a game, but I never, ever saw him as a match winner. I just saw him as a bloke that would have an amazing period of a game, but not a full game. How he's been able to turn that around, and even in his speech last night, the fact that he said, you know, there was a couple of years ago, he was told by his manager and his dad and others that he had to pull his head in. Otherwise, that was it. They're not going to look after him. So he has. So there's a word of warning to every single sports person out there. And we say it so many times, we see these kids in the AFL who mess up after, you know, 2 or 3 years, and we say, they've only got to do it for 5 or 6 years and they can make a fortune. Pull your head in. Get fair income about your footy. Do what you've got to do. And you might not be Dustin Martin and you might not get a Brownlow medal, but you, as I tell you what, you can improve your lot and become a much better person and a much better player. And I think that's what Dustin's done, pulling his head in and his ability now to win a game. He is a genuine 150% match winner. And thank God he's on our side.
Isn't it so good to have him on our team? And you're right. Like he found, I think he matured. And the other thing he found was a tank, because he always used to, as you say, he'd play a brilliant quarter and then he'd fade out of a game and then he'd come back in the end and he'd do something special. Last year he sort of developed that tank, but he wasn't impacting a game like he has this year in terms of playing that bit more forward to centre. He was getting little cheapies around the back. Yeah, he racked up the disposals. Yeah, he ran out the game, but he wasn't having that sort of influence of you know, score involvements and goal involvements and that sort of thing. And then the other person you mentioned there, Trent Cotchin. The ferocity of which he is attacking packs now, it's probably been the case all year, but certainly in the finals, it's like he's been out to prove all the doubters wrong. It's a gear that I didn't know whether he had it in him or not. That I always thought, you know, Trent Cotchin, you know, he's a lovely fella, and he's the sort of captain you take home to mum. But I just didn't know if he had that real mongrel to drag a team over the line. And you know, there's a couple of passages of play where he's come off the contest, he's run 40 metres and laid a tackle to get the guy over the boundary line, and then he keeps running and gets off to the bench. He attacks a contest, and then he attacks again, and he puts Josh Kelly on the ground, wins the ball, holding the ball. It's stuff from Trent Cotchin I don't think we've seen before. Certainly no. To this consistency, and you talk about leaders stepping up in September. He has been nothing short of spectacular, and you know, he's playing like a Brownlow medalist, which, you know, I still find it hard to believe that he actually is, but such is the case. Was there anyone Before I highlight a couple other people, your thoughts, I'll go to you, Carl, first. Just being amongst that, a lot's been spoken about it. Dermot Burton said yesterday that he has never been amongst an atmosphere like it, where you've got 94,000-odd fans, of which 90,000 are barracking for the one team. You know, it's English Premier League sort of stuff, like at Wembley. What did you feel like being amongst that crowd?
Oh, look, it was an emotional time. You know, you talk about, Mitch, how you didn't know whether or not at the end of the game, you were pretty emotional, as were a lot of Richmond fans, but you didn't know whether or not you wanted to cry or not. Like, I was a bit the same with I was just, you know, I didn't know what to feel. Emotions going on everywhere. We've just progressed to our first grand final since 1982 with the hope of winning our first grand final since 1980. And I've never seen Richmond in a grand final in my lifetime. So it was just emotional times.
But the feeling of the atmosphere, the noise and, you know, what did you feel? Like, what did you, when you're walking up from, because Carl and I went for a beer at the pub at the Corner Hotel before, and just the amount of people everywhere and what emotions and did you feel when you're walking up doing the, when we're doing the walk up there to the G?
Well, look, I have to admit, I'm a Melbourne Victory supporter, so I've been a part of the active support and seen what that's like. But it just doesn't compare to seeing your AFL club making a prelim final with the hope of going to a grand final. Like, the nerves were there walking to the MCG, but you see how many Tiger supporters there were. They were there in numbers, and not just on the walk to the MCG, but, you know, at the pubs down Swan Street. Everybody was up and about. Everybody was there saying, go Tigers, let's go Tigers. Completely outnumbered the GWS supporters, let's put it out there. They were outnumbered. And look, I was also at the elimination final 3 years ago when we played Port Adelaide and got flogged. I thought the atmosphere then was great, and that was 52,500 supporters, some of them Richmond, some of them Port, majority Port, obviously, and them singing Never Tear Us Apart. I thought that was incredible. But then I got to the MCG, and it was amazing. It was so loud. And I read also as well, you know, our sound's measured in decibels most of the time. I think it is. Decibels?
DB.
The crowd at the MCG was 122 dB.
It's not quite the record, but we're getting close.
That's eight shorter than an engine of an aeroplane. Like, that's how loud it was.
We did pretty well.
Yeah.
I reckon Shebex, I'm going to ask you a question to clear up a bit of a misnomer that's been doing the rounds of social media in a moment. But for me, there were a couple of moments in the game where I felt like Richmond were getting on top, and the noise at three-quarter time when the three-quarter time siren went was as if the full-time siren had gone, and there was just this wall of noise and appreciation and people clapping. And at that point, I think we were three goals clear. We felt like maybe we had one hand on a spot in the grand final, and there were two key moments, I think, in the space of one another in that third quarter where I went, okay, I think we've got this. And I reckon everyone might have a different moment where they felt like, okay, we're stepping in. And both involved Steve Johnson in about a minute of one another. Steve Johnson takes a mark 40 metres out, finally gets a mark, and he gets his chance for his first shot at goal. The guy is a match winner in what could have been what turned out to be his final game of football. Wasn't confident having a shot. Handballed off to Nathan Wilson, who puts it out in the full. A minute later, he gets another one. 50 metres out, again, feels like he hasn't got the leg on it, tries to do something way too cute, hooks it straight back in, and the noise when that ball was turned over was just, it was electric. And, you know, that for me, that was the moment when I went, I reckon we're going to a grand final. What was it for you guys? I'll start with you, Shebex.
Well, for me, it was the moment that they picked Steve Johnson for the preliminary final. Mm. I spoke about this 2 weeks ago, didn't I? I was crying and pleading to Leon Cameron to pick him, because he was just always going to be underdone. So effectively, they were two players down with Sheil and Steve Johnson on the park, because he was just nowhere in it. So you're right. I think very pivotal moments, especially that handball. As soon as he got that handball off, I thought, oh, my goodness me.
That's when the mental game was won.
Yeah, exactly. They talk about the third quarter being a premiership quarter. How good was that third quarter from Richmond?
Well, the third quarter, because our pressure hadn't been what it needed to be in that first half. You could see, and look, I suppose we might...
A bit of credit to the Giants for that too. They had some great runs.
They did. As soon as the ball got forward of centre, you could see the numbers streaming around. You just felt like, geez, they're getting space, and if they keep this up, it's you know, it's going to hurt us. They got out to, I think it was a 6 or 7 point lead, and then Daniel Rioli kicked that beautiful 1-2 goal from 50 metres where he took a handball. I think it was to Prestia, and then he kept going, took it back, and put it from on 50. Everyone doubts Daniel Rioli's leg. They go, oh, he's small, he can't kick it. He can kick it. He can kick the ball 60 metres with ease. That got us back to within a point. Then we ended up kicking a couple of behinds and got in front. And yeah, you're right. The credit has to go to GWS for their first half, but then. Second, that third quarter, the pressure index blew up. In the second half, our pressure index went to 213. So it topped what we did against Geelong, which is amazing. When you think about it, we'd set the record against Geelong with 209, and that's what we were doing in the second half there. The game gets on our terms. Every single little moment, the crowd's cheering it. Rance is plucking marks at defensive 50. People are starting to hug in the crowd. And, we were just waiting for the song. And I really, just sitting there for that last 10 minutes of the last quarter, they did kick a couple of goals and got it back to about four goals. And we saw, you thought, oh, geez, not. And then Jack kicked his first goal of the game. And it was party time. And you could just sit there and enjoy it. And, Shebex, what were you feeling at that point?
Oh, look, for elation, there was no doubt about it. If I just go back one more step, the other time that I actually felt confident about us winning that game on Saturday actually happened on Friday night when I saw the job that Adelaide did on Geelong. And you guys know how nervous I'd been all through the week in regards to the game.
Yeah, about the bye.
Yep, exactly, about the bye and how that was going to affect us. When I saw that had absolutely no effect to Adelaide, all of a sudden my feelings turned to, hang on, we can do this, because if this hasn't affected Adelaide, why in the hell is it going to affect us? So I was really a lot more confident Friday night heading into Saturday that that wasn't going to be the case. But my feelings at the end of the game, it was really weird. I was stunned, I suppose, that we'd actually got there. The fact that, we're finally seeing a Richmond team get into a grand final. The elation and listening to the crowd was just, though, it carried you into a new level. I remember being at the MCG a couple of years ago when Liverpool were there. And the singing of the song "You'll Never Walk Alone" and the feeling of emotion at that time,
yep.
Hearing 90,000, 95,000 people all singing that song together, it was very similar on Saturday. Hearing 90,000 people, or 87, whatever there was, 94, wasn't it?
Yeah, 94,295, I think it was, or somewhere around that mark.
All singing the Richmond song, and that yellow and black, you've never heard anything like it. And just I was man enough to admit there was just a little. There was a little tear in the corner of the eye. It was just beautiful to be a part of that.
It must have been special because for those who don't know, but Shebex is the voice of the G. But being in the do you actually hit the button, Shebex, or not? Like, just let's clear that up.
We do have an audio person, but to keep up tradition and to keep up the folklore, yes, I do.
Yeah. Well, so it must be special.
Everyone seems to think that I do, and everyone blames me for it. Now, so let's clear up. Let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yep. The GWS song.
Yeah, okay. So what happened was, after every... GWS had that little eight-piece band that were there, and I don't know whether that was trying to create some sort of giant atmosphere, because obviously there wasn't going to be any other. So they played their song when the guys ran out, and they were playing their song after every time GWS kicked a goal. So whenever that would happen, they were mic'd up, our audio guy lifted up their microphones, and he heard the da na 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 na. And that went over the Giants goal on the screen and all that, and then we played the replay. So what happened was, because they actually kicked a goal after the siren, the audio guy, they've played their song, and the audio guy thought, well, hang on, they've kicked a goal, so he's lifted up the fader, hence the reason why the song went out.
Yeah, and everyone was
thinking at the time that probably it's not the right time to play it because the Richmond song should be played because they've actually won the game. So everyone's thinking, oh, hang on, Shebeki's pushed the wrong button, he's played the wrong song. Had nothing to do with it.
I'm glad you've cleared that up because I know a lot of people were thinking, oh, I was just one bloke down there with a trumpet. But the fact that it was actually a conscious thing, because I was convinced it was coming over the PA. I had a speaker above me.
It did come over the PA, definitely.
Well, I'm glad that's cleared up because everyone was going, oh, geez, what a mistake by the control room. They played the wrong song. And no, it wasn't the case. It was just literally giving them the consistency of what they'd done after every goal. Why did they do that, though? Just to give them... I suppose the tiger in me goes, bugger him, like, let him rot.
As I said, Carl, I think it was just because there was only going to be a couple of thousand Giants people there, so I was trying to create some sort of Giants atmosphere when they kicked the goal to try and sort of, make it a little bit bigger than what it may have been. And I think that was the reason why it was done.
Two players I just quickly wanted to note, and then I'll throw it over to Carl here. Shane Edwards, I thought, was fantastic. He's an extremely underrated player in this, in our whole midfield system. I think we sometimes forget that he's there. And he was fantastic as a link-up player. And we've been calling for his head in various times in the last month as he's the player to go out if we're going to make a change. But Jason Castagna, everyone thinks about, is he kicking goals? Is he kicking goals? Well, he did hit the scoreboard on the weekend. He almost played as that sort of half, a bit of a centre-half forward role in being that player around there, but he was in. He had 18 disposals on the weekend. Did hit the scoreboard, and he was involved in eight score involvements, which was only second behind Dusty, who had 13, which was some sort of record. So, well done to Jason for actually.
Off the back of that, though, is that going to be enough to keep him in the grand final team? The Sam Lloyd.
Sam Lloyd was pretty special in the VFL grand final,
and he has been special for the last few weeks. And he gives you sort of that little bit of an extra height advantage that we are lacking 100% still in that forward line, even though he's not massively tall himself, but he plays as a tall. Is Castagna the man that misses out for Lloyd?
It's a great question, and it's a question that the only we know that Lloyd can rack up the disposals, we know that Lloyd can hit the scoreboard. My question is on his pressure. Has he lifted his pressure in the VFL? And look, I'm probably not one to make that call. I'll throw that over to you guys.
Yeah. Can I just say, though, on Lloyd, the most impressive thing from my point of view was the fact that he was able to play like a defensive role as well. Like, from my observations of the VFL grand final that I saw him play, he'd go down back and he'd get a clearance for us, like kick it forward. And I did see him doing that early on in the scene when he did play in the seniors and the AFL side as well. I think, he's as fit as he ever has been, Sammy Lloyd, and he's just running the ground like there's no tomorrow, to be honest. So, look, do I see Castagna going out for Lloyd? To be perfectly honest, no, I don't. I think if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I've been one to be pretty critical of Castagna across the year, but I just think, considering how it's panned out for the whole year, it should just keep the way it is.
It's hard to sort of look at dropping him on the basis of what Castagna did on the weekend. But as we say, Lloyd, he had 35 and 9 tackles and kicked a goal in the VFL granny, which is and he won the best on ground, which might as well be the segue here into the VFL grand final loss. Which unfortunately, Shebex, as you rejoin us, the VFL grand final loss. Richmond going down to Port Melbourne 74-70. It's blown up that whole Geelong theory from 2007 to 10 years on.
It was the missing link, effectively, that because Richmond will win the grand final, Dusty won the Brownlow, everything else would have been completed except for this one thing in the VFL loss. And look, I tell you what, you've got... Take nothing away from Port Melbourne. They were spectacular to the extent that they stayed in the game and the way that they fought to get back into that game and actually do what they did to win the game. From a standalone team with probably Robbie Nahas in it, I don't know whether that's good or bad for them.
He copped it from the crowd, Robin Nahas.
Did he? What? Forget about booing Deledio on Saturday. There was a massive hatred of Robbie Nahas on Sunday at Etihad Stadium. It was a great effort by them. And Richmond had their chances. They certainly did to wrap up the game, but Port Melbourne stayed in. And it's in a way, it's good. Not that we lost, but it's definitely good that we got to that grand final. And a few of the players now have had that opportunity to feel what that's like. And even the senior players have had the opportunity to be in the rooms before the game and all that sort of stuff. So to soak up that little bit of atmosphere and that little bit of pressure as well. So, disappointing. And I'll tell you what, the disappointment of losing that grand final on Sunday was bad enough. I cannot even appreciate as what it would be like on Saturday, hence the way I felt on Sunday. Because I felt gutted on Sunday that we'd lost that, right in the emotion of those last 2 minutes, and I really felt gutted. And so if we lose on Sunday and there's only a kick in it, it's going to be bad territory.
I'd like to think that those players, those senior players from the AFL side who were there watching it, actually draw on that feeling and, being in the rooms amongst it and going, I don't want to be feeling this like this on Saturday.
I'm sure I will.
I don't want to be, I do feel for, Ben Lennon You know, he copped a bit. Some people were giving him a whack. I'm convinced he knew exactly how long was left, and the word must have gone out. There's no time left. So if we get a mark near 50, we just stop and go back and take the shot because, you know, as soon as he did go back, the siren went within 5 seconds. He did probably rush the kick slightly, but maybe he was just going on adrenaline, and that was going to be the momentum to get the kick there over the line. We didn't get it, unfortunately.
We were in the Richmond cheer squad, which was right behind those goals that he was kicking to.
Yeah.
And at no point from his walking in to kicking the goal did it actually look like he was going to kick it. His body just didn't look shaped right. Mm. And then as soon as the ball came off his boot, it was heading right. And at no point was I actually confident that, was going to go through the goals.
He just rushed it.
Yeah.
Ben Griffiths had rushed, took, on the other side. In the minute before that, he took way too long. Was it Taylor Hunt? Probably, could have been given a free kick 20 metres out from that kick from Ben Griffiths. So Ben Griffiths took a mark on the 50-metre arc in the pocket and then took about 15, it felt like an eternity, really, to wheel around and finally hit up a player. Taylor Hunt was free for forever. There were a couple of other players just, you know, crying around. Eventually bombs this big one long. Taylor Hunt gets taken out of the contest, which, you know, it was probably a 50-50 call. It wouldn't have surprised me if they paid it. They didn't, so play on. But, you know, that, you're talking about missed opportunities and, you know, I don't think they'll be reliving it to the extent of, you know, if that happened in an AFL grand final. But certainly, you know, have your time again. And, you know, credit to Port Melbourne who just kept sticking at it. And, you know, I do like, you know, I've got a lot of time for Port Melbourne because they, at the start of the year, they were rattling tins. They were rattling tins for survival.
Their players didn't get paid for round one.
Yeah.
There was absolutely no money in the bank to pay their players for round one. So to be able to do that and then come up and win a grand final, absolutely take nothing away from Port. No. That was just a great effort.
Well done to Ayrsie and the team. It does mean that we're zipping one for the week in the Clash Jumper, which brings us to the Clash Jumper, which the AFL, you know, I thought we were going to toss a coin. I thought there might have been, you know, maybe they just make a decision. You know, maybe they have a common sense decision. But no, we are... just as we're enjoying our celebrations on Saturday night, they stick it to us and say you're in the inverse jumper, which I don't actually mind. I know it cops a lot of criticism, but I think as a Clash Jumper, it's about as good as you can get because it's literally just the same colours inverted. But
now this is exactly right. Let's have a look at this. Let's have a look at this logically, okay? And there's been a lot of illogical talk about it over the last week or so, but yeah. Let's have a look at it logically. There is as much black in the Adelaide jumper as there is yellow. So there's yellow stripes going all the way around.
Well, it's more of a navy blue for them. Like it's a really dark blue.
It looks black to me. Yeah. I'm colorblind. I don't know, but it looks black, and they've got the yellow in there as well. There is no difference as to whether you wear full black with a yellow stripe or full yellow with a black stripe. It is going to clash with one third of the jumper, and that's either with black or yellow. So unless they told Richmond to wear a fully white jumper, I cannot understand how this is any different to wearing the black jumper.
Do you feel like there's an actual clash, enough of a clash at all to warrant a change? If you get it,
Who are we worried about in regards to the clash?
Well, according to Gil McLaughlin, there's millions of people watching. If I quote KB,
So you're telling me that the millions of people watching cannot tell between an Adelaide jumper and a Richmond jumper?
Apparently.
Oh, please.
Carl?
Oh, I've heard some bullshit in my life, but that Finnicum takes the cake.
Does it actually, and I suppose, I can understand why KB's flying the flag on this really hard, because no one has worn that jumper more than Kevin Bartlett. And that's what, and so therefore, you know, to me, no one, that jumper doesn't mean as much to anyone as much as it means to Kevin Bartlett, because he's pulled it on over his head more than anyone else. The question I have is, does it mean as much to you as and us as the fans, that we on our biggest day of the year, of our biggest day in the club's history in 35 years, that we need to be wearing that jumper?
You know what it means to me, and sorry, Carl, if I'm jumping in here.
No, it's okay.
What it means to me, you go back to the 1966 Grand Final and see Doc up on the stage holding up a Premiership Cup for St Kilda in a Collingwood jumper.
Yeah,
you see Des Tudnham standing next to him, losing in a Grand Final with a St Kilda jumper, not holding the cup. That's what it means to me. That you look at that picture and you think, if you were new to the game, or you think, well, hang on, who won the grand final? Was it Collingwood or Richmond? They look at this jumper and people will think, who has won this grand final? Because people don't recognise Richmond 95, 99% of the year to be wearing that jumper. I think what they need to do, if they've got to wear that jumper during the game, so be it. If that has to happen, so be it. But I reckon as soon as the game is over, they need to bring out their proper jerseys if they win, so they can wear those proper jerseys up on the stage when they accept the cup. That would be my compromise to this whole thing. As long as they are in their proper Richmond jerseys when they're accepting their medals and accepting the cup, I won't really give a damn about it, because at the end of the day, in 40 years' time, with my grandkids look at the picture of Richmond winning the 2017 Premiership, they will see a proper Richmond team.
If the AFL had half a brain, they'd let Richmond wear their normal strip, their home and away strip. No disrespect towards the AFL, but the fact that they've gone to the extent of saying, you know, the away team has to wear the away strip. What happened a few years ago when Hawthorn, you know, they weren't the home team?
No,
sure they weren't the home team.
I'm pretty sure West Coast were the higher ranked team.
Exactly.
And the AFL just said, get stuffed. Hawthorn's in its traditional jumper. West Coast are wearing this one. And then
Have we seen Collingwood? Would Eddie McGuire stand for this?
No.
He came to Collingwood this week and they were playing North Melbourne?
No, he wouldn't.
And if there's ever been a clash jumper, it would be Collingwood and North Melbourne, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and particularly in the days of black and white, where it is, you know, if we're talking about, you know, it's going to be difficult to see for the TV viewers. Back in those days, in the 1977 grand final,
couldn't tell it was black and white. You're right; there was no colour.
But everyone knew who was who anyway. So, like, if it wasn't an issue then, why is it an issue now? I fight the fight on the sake of the fight, because I think, you know, from a principal perspective, you know, we should be wearing. You know, I don't think there's a clash really. So I don't see why we don't just wear our jumper and wear white shorts and let them wear their jumper and wear their blue shorts, and that should be enough to do it. And the other thing is, I know they showed some footage during the week of, oh, you know, here's the clash. That was from about 4 years ago when the yellow in our jumper is a lot different now. It's a lot brighter. It's a lot more fluoro almost. And you know, I actually don't see there being much of an issue at all. That said. To me, you know, am I going to lose sleep over Richmond running out in that jumper? Probably not as much as other people, but I'm disappointed. But I think there's bigger fish to fry, and if, you know, I'd hate it to be some sort of distraction for the week of, you know, I tend to think if Richmond players pull on a jumper and run out to play a game of football, that to me is a Richmond jumper. But you know, I completely sympathise with those who, you know, really, really, really want to fly the flag on this, and you know, I suppose the. Why not? What would the AFL do if we ran out there and just wore it anyway? Like, what are they going to do? Call the game off?
No, I'll find you 10 grand, 20 grand or whatever it might be. But...
Oh, do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just wear white shorts. Or, you know, if that's the solution, wear white shorts with the black traditional strip. In my opinion, that's probably the solution to it.
But the AFL can stop this crap.
Yeah.
From now on.
It's just
by
silly.
Saying that every away team, whether it's a home and away game, whether it's a final or whatever, if you are the away team, you have to wear an away strip. And if they make that rule standing now for the entire season, then we live with it and we wear it and that's fine. But to do it just because it's the grand final, it just is beyond me as to why it isn't an issue for the entire year and then all of a sudden it becomes an issue for the grand final. Make that ruling now. If you are the away team and they have it in EPL, away teams have to wear white strip all the way through. Make that ruling now. Away team, every home and away game, whatever it is, regardless, if you are the away team, you have to wear your alternate strip. Everyone lives by that, and then we know where we stand.
And I think you talk about that lack of consistency from you know, you're talking from season to season, from week to week, from grand final to grand final. If that's the policy, I think if that was the policy from the get-go, it sucks, but you'd cop it. But the fact that in recent years there's been three or four different policies, it's meant that, you know, from our perspective, there should be that wiggle room, but clearly we're being, you know, put down and they're not buying it, and so be it. Before we get into the actual game, do you have any doubt, I think it's being announced tomorrow, which is Wednesday at the time, today's Tuesday, we're recording it. If we do win, the two names being thrown up to present the cup... Tony Jewell or Kevin Bartlett, who would you be supporting to do that? Both, you know, both Richmond icons in their own right.
Well, for me, I love TJ. I think he's been a fantastic Richmond man as a player and also as a coach and the like. But for me, it has to be KB. It just could not be anyone else.
Could you have both?
You could. Well, KB was Richmond's, last premiership Norm Smith medalist, and I say premiership Norm Smith because Morris Rioli won in 82, but we didn't win the flag that year. And Tony Jewell was the coach that day, so he's our last premiership coach. So, you know what, if you can't separate them, do it both. I tend to agree with you, Shebex, in that, Tony Jewell hasn't got... I love Tony Jewell, but KB's the one with the statue at the MCG. Yeah. So, you talk about Richmond icons... You talk about Richmond legends. You talk about legends of the AFL. We've got a living legend sitting here in the room next to us as we record this right now. And I think there's no one better suited to present that cup in an antagonistic little bastard that we love him, but he should be the one that that should be presenting the cup.
Correct. Exactly.
Okay.
I've got another name to throw in there just quickly. Yeah? What about Ian Stewart?
Oh, I think, yeah. Richo?
He was our last Brownlow medalist before Koch. It'd be only right if he handed the Premiership Cup.
Potentially.
Just as an idea.
We're not talking Brownlow medals.
Yeah. I think he presented the Brownlow to Koch last year, though, didn't he?
Might have.
Because they had that stupid little, well, not stupid, but that tiny little thing, the off-Broadway presentation. Because Croft did it for Sam Mitchell, being their most recent one. So that makes sense.
That's a stupid idea, Carl. Yeah.
Sorry.
For KB to present the cup. We're going to start the campaign now. We'll have the posters up out the front of Swan Street here. Saturday, 2:30 p.m., the 2017 AFL Grand Final, Richmond versus Adelaide, our first one in 35 years. It's going to be a game of their crisp ball movement versus our pressure. What's your initial thoughts going into this? We talk about teams that have been tough to beat this year. Adelaide are, they've finished on top of the ladder for a reason. I'll start with you, Carl.
Yeah, look, my only concern from an Adelaide perspective is the fact that they haven't played much football at the MCG.
Well, I've got their record here.
Yeah, they played 11 games that they've won this year have been at Adelaide Oval.
Yep.
They've played in two wins at the MCG and one draw. If I'm not
two wins and a draw. So they've beat Carlton and Hawthorn there, and they had a draw with Collingwood, which that's the game I think that Damien Hardwick will be going back and watching this week, as if he's looking for how to undo Adelaide. That first half of what Collingwood did to Adelaide, granted Adelaide managed to turn it around in the second half, but to get out to a 9-goal lead against the team that was top of the table, and a team that now is lacking Mitch McGovern, who was the key player in sort of being a bit of that turnaround, that's going to be crucial, I think, to what Richmond's going to have to do. Because the thing that Adelaide does so well is they punish on turnovers. So probably not to quite the level we do in terms of pressure, but they pressure, they turn the ball over, they then go up the other end and score freely. And, that's something that we need to be really conscious of. It's something that they did. That's how they got us in the second half against them in round six. Mm. And it's certainly something that, I think our defence is a lot more rock solid since then.
Yep.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens.
We haven't played them on the MCG this year. MCG's our fortress and we play it like no other ground. It's our home ground.
Well, we're 11-2 there this year.
Yeah.
And our two losses there were to Freo by 2 points and Sydney by 9 points. So we've been in every game. We've won 11 of 13 there at the G this year. This will be hopefully win number 12.
Yep.
And it's the best attack in the comp versus the best defence, which brings me to sort of the key matchups. Their forward line is, we love our small dynamic forward line, but their forward line has got it all. It is the best structured forward line in the comp. They've got a couple of big talls, they've got a couple of smalls, and they've got a link-up man who's the best link-up man in the comp in Tom Lynch. And, we talk about Walker, Jenkins, Betts, Lynch and Charlie Cameron. Shebex, who would you be sending to Tex Walker, Alex Rance or David Asprey?
I think Alex Rance probably starts on him for me. Once again, I think it's going to be one of those, let's move guys through him and let's keep guys fresh on him. And I think Richmond did that pretty well on Saturday against GWS. Who's the guy that kicked three or four goals?
Himmelberg,
yeah. So Asprey started on him. He got two, and then Rance went on to him after that. So the good thing is that we've got the ability, we've got the personnel to be able to change depending on the circumstances. So for me, though, I think Rance probably starts on Tex Walker. Best, one of the best forwards in the league. Definitely gets picked up by the best defender in the league, I would have thought. The thing that worries me about Adelaide so much is the fact that we've looked at the teams that we've played in the last couple of games in the finals, and there's been one or two players that we've probably spoken about that we had to stop to make sure that, you know, they didn't get on top of us. When you look at Adelaide, though, the list doesn't stop at one or two. It goes into four, five, six, seven, eight blokes that you probably need to be concerned about who can really turn the game for them.
They have stars everywhere, don't they?
Exactly. And have we got the amount of personnel to be able to do that? Yeah, we have. Have we got the amount of personnel to be able to do that for an entire game? Not sure whether we've actually seen that from Richmond yet in 2017. So I think that's going to be our biggest test.
I think in a lot of ways it parallels last year's grand final. And when you looked at Sydney on paper and you looked at the Bulldogs on paper, you went, oh, Sydney, you've got, you know, they've got Franklin, they've got Hanbury, they've got Josh Kennedy, they've got Tippett, they've got, you know, they've got all these stars everywhere. And you looked at the Bulldogs and went, oh, they've got Marcus Bontempelli and, you know, a bunch of hard workers. But, you know, I think star factor will sort of get over in the end. And the Dogs put them to the sword. So, you know, that's kind of the echoes a bit of what we've done. We've got our four stars and they are, you know, they're just about the best. If you were to take four players out of any team and go, who are your best four? They are just about the best four that you could take out of any team. It's then you look at, you know, with Adelaide, you know, they've got the Tom Lynches and they've got the Jake Leavers and they've got Rory Laird, you know, Rory Laird, All-Australian. They've got the Crouch brothers who've gone to another level this year. Rory Sloan, who was fantastic and, you know, did really well in the Brownlow and started really strongly, but he is susceptible to a tag that we found. You know, Josh Jenkins can kick four goals. Eddie Betts is a match winner. And that's why it's important that, you know, I think that, we can if they get the game on their terms, they'll put us to the sword and rightfully so.
What I see their terms to be is Adelaide are very good at smothering. If they can contain you, then they get the and then all of a sudden you make that mistake. You're right, Mitch. They get the turnover, they score off the turnover. So what I've noticed with this Richmond team though in this final series, or maybe even the week or two before when it sort of started, is that we're very much. Our game plan is very similar to the Bulldogs last year in that we're getting that ball forward as quickly as we can. So we're not messing around with it in the midfield. We're trying to get it out of the midfield and up forward as quickly as we can, give Jack the opportunity one-on-one before the players get back there. And if not, then the ball comes down. We've got the small brigade they pick up and then they do the damage from there. So the fact that we are moving that ball forward quickly plays against what Adelaide would like in regards to being able to actually smother you and contain you and make you force in the mistake. So I think we've got a game plan now suits the ability to be able to beat Adelaide. And we saw that to an extent when we were leading in that first quarter, when we played them back in round six or, you know, earlier in the year,
yeah,
whatever that may have been, that we moved that ball quickly and Adelaide seemed to be a little bit sort of, you know, all around the place on that.
And
they then adjusted in the second quarter and adjusted pretty quickly. And hit us pretty hard from that point of view. So I think we've got the game plan to be able to beat them. I think we've got the players to be able to beat them. It's just a matter of everything working for us correctly on the day.
I think so. What they did in that second quarter of that game is they started to spread our defence because what we were when the players would when we'd set up and we'd get the ball up our end and we'd pressure it all in, they decided very quickly that rather than trying to go down the guts, they were let's just use the flanks, spread the defenders in, and they can't keep the pressure on. Which, you know, you look at the footage against like GWS and Geelong the fortnight before. There's four, five, six players just humming around the ball like bees around a hive. Adelaide were very quick to be able to, you know, try and nullify that by just getting out to space and making us accountable a bit more. And, you know, I think you can get away with that in the Adelaide Oval. It is similar at the MCG, but as we say before, we do play that system so well there. And, you know, I think that the other thing that might go in our advantage as well is that I wonder just whether they're a bit too tall down back. And I think that was the case on the weekend for GWS as well, is that they ended up having to move Tomlinson out and play him on a wing to try and get the right matchup down back. But, you know, they've got Talia, they've got Lever, they've got Laird, they've got Hardigan. And I just wonder whether, you know, against the likes of Rioli, Butler, Castagna, Caddy, Townsend, whether, you know, and, you know, Dusty when he goes forward. Imagine, you know, Dustin Martin with Kyle Hardigan on him forward is just going to make him, you know, squirm. So I wonder if that's a way to exploit them. Talia will go to Riewoldt, obviously, and, you know, Jack, by his own standards, will admit he will want to have a better game than he did on the weekend. But If there's a game that I'd love to see Jack break out and have a massive one in, it is a grand final.
You just get the feeling, don't you, that he's ready, he's true to have a big, big game. My concern is, and I agree with you, I think the two blokes will drop back and fill up that gap that Jack loves to run into, and that could be an issue due to the fact that those two blokes may be fairly tall. So this is why I'm still thinking that there may still be a change to come into this Richmond Grand Final team, just to give us that little bit more tallness in the forward line, and whether that be Sam Lloyd, whether that still be, and I've been crying it for the last 4 or 5 weeks, whether that still be a Sean Hampson.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned Sean Hampson, because that's the one I was going to bring up, because Sam Jacobs, and Choco Williams brought this up yesterday on SEN, but Sam Jacobs is potentially the match winner in all this, because if he gets a hold of the ruck, He will make the Crouch brothers and Sloan win the ball far more easily than, you know, we'd like them to. And he's been doing that in this final series so far. He did it against GWS. He did it against Geelong. Just putting the ball down blokes' throats, hit outs to advantage, and away they go. Now, you can put all the taggers you want on Rory Sloan and those sort of guys, but if you've got a ruckman who's just doing it at will, you know, that might be a key issue. And as much as we've loved Nank, as much as he's been doing a fantastic job, he against a quality ruckman like Sam Jacobs, where it is going to be all about hit-outs, maybe we need, you know, a hit-out specialist. And from what Sean Hampson has been doing big things.
He'll kill Greg. There's no doubt about that. Greg won't stand a chance against him. Nankervis will be very serviceable and will, you know, win his fair share of ruck knocks. But I think when Nankervis goes to have that little bit of a break, you're nearly conceding the fact that Jacobs is going to win the ruck for that 5 or 10 minutes that Nankervis isn't going to be there. So whether you put in a Hampson, who knows, you're going to get a better contest against him. I still believe that there's still one change to be made in this game. And it's going to be a really tough situation for the selectors to do that, because who's that person that's going to miss out if there is? And how do you tell a bloke, you know, look, you've been fantastic for the last 2 weeks, but because of team setup, we need this. Always hard for a person to accept that, but I just have this feeling that Thursday night there will be one change.
I hate to say it, if we do opt for a second tool and bring Hampson in on form, because his form has been quite good in the VFL, and it's good enough, I reckon, to say to the selectors, hey, look, we definitely could use a second tool. And Greg, as he said, Shebex is probably not going to do the job if we need to contest a crucial ruck contest at some point in the game, which I'm sure there will be a moment like that. And if Greg loses out to it and we didn't have that second ruck there, it will be pretty disappointing if that's what defines the result. So, look, in my opinion, what I would see happening, if anything, would be Nathan Broad missing out, he's been good, and I hope that he doesn't. Or
they've all been good, boys.
Yeah,
they've all been good. But if you're going to make the change, someone has to miss out.
Yeah. Well, and in my opinion, it'd have to be between Broad and Graham, and I don't see Graham going out, because even though he's, you know, first year player, he's been outstanding.
He probably didn't quite have the tackling pressure game that he's done in his first three games on the weekend. So I wonder whether he's the vulnerable one. They go, maybe he's a kid. Mm. He's played four games. Can we trust him in a grand final to deliver the sort of pressure, particularly if it's going to come at, you know, can we rely on everyone else to cover that sort of pressure, and which would allow us to bring in a Hampson to make sure that we can get first use of the ball.
Yeah.
That's a big question. And, you know, Sam Lloyd's been playing predominantly as a midfielder as well. And, but, you know, there's big questions ahead for these guys.
If you think about it, if Lloyd comes in and Hampson comes in and, say, Broad goes out, and or Broad or Graham goes out and Castagna goes out, McIntosh last week played on a wing. What I would see him doing, he can go down half back,
play a bit taller.
Yeah, he's a bit of a utility, McIntosh. He can go up forward, he can go down back. I'd see him going back and taking the role that a Broad or a Graham would play with them going out. And even Lloyd, he can actually play off halfback. We saw a bit of that in the VFL Grand Final. So, yeah, there's some options there.
The key is, I mean, I think you then have to look at the defensive setup against Adelaide's forward line. And as we say, has been their strength. So if you're sending Rance to Walker and Asprey to Jenkins, you're then probably sending Dylan Grimes to Eddie Betts. Because Dylan Grimes can play that shutdown role. The issue then is you've then got Charlie Cameron and Tom Lynch to match up, and Tom Lynch can play tall or short. So if Camden McIntosh is going to Tom Lynch, that's an area they'll exploit, because Tom Lynch is that real link up.
Charlie Cameron.
Yeah, and that's why I wonder, you know, I go Broad, oh, mate, you know, he can actually probably play that sort of role. Basher's a bit of a loose player out of the hubbuck. Vlosten's the other one in there who probably he could go there as well to Tom Lynch. But we do like him rolling off and dropping back as well, which Adelaide don't allow you to do because they just stream forward as soon as they force that turnover. So there are some headaches when it comes to the defensive. I wonder whether Sam Lloyd can come in and play as a defensive shutdown role. Has he got the? Can he do that? I don't like rolling the dice in a grand final. Like, I never thought I'd be saying this, but I don't like the idea of, you know, that we might have to change up from what we're doing. I think, you know, maybe we just have to back ourselves in.
You'd be better off bringing in Reece Conker.
No.
Yeah. don't
no.
Jesus.
No. No.
Anthony, I suppose just to round out this discussion, if Koch was to have missed, it would have been between Lloyd and probably Anthony Miles to have come in. Brandon Ellis can drop back, but again, has he got that sort of real nuggety run with, in a defensive sense, kind of ability? I'm not sure, but I think we just have to probably back in our defensive system as a whole, and you know, if there is one player that's slightly mismatched, then it hasn't. What's that? Sorry,
our defensive structure hasn't let us down yet.
No, it hasn't. It hasn't. And you know, if the day is to back it in is the grand final day, then so be it. Before we wrap it up and get some tips and keep moving and enjoy the rest of the week, I just wanted to bring one little stat to everyone's attention, which it's just a general guide of what Richmond's done this year. And you know, maybe it's a good omen, but every single team that Richmond has played this year, when we've played them twice, when we lost to them, if we lost to them the first time, the second time we got them. So we're very good at learning our lesson the next time around. And so I look back at our losses to teams that we've then, you know, gone on and played again. So we lost to Fremantle, smashed them the next time. We lost to St Kilda, smashed them the next time. Lost to GWS, got them again, and then got them again. Lost to Geelong, got them again a month later. This week, we are playing Adelaide for the second time this year, and they beat us the first time around.
I like your thinking.
So we've learnt our lessons, and if we follow that trend, then we're home.
So based on that, I'm going Richmond by 4 goals, 24 points.
24 points. At what point in the game, Chibex, do you think we'll be ahead?
I think we'll kick the first goal and we're going to stay in front all the way through.
Beautiful. Carl?
I reckon it's going to be pretty evenly matched up until half time. The third quarter will be pretty competitive as well. And then at the end of the third quarter, we'll just see our legs being the fresher ones and getting over the top just a tad. And then in the fourth quarter, I think we'll just run over the top of them.
I think you're right. I think that's going to be the plan all day is going to be just to grind it out. Don't let it get them on their turns. Keep it a slog. You know, the forecast is that there might be a bit of rain. It's going to be cold. Just grind it out. And then like it did on the weekend, eventually we break them. So as long as we're in the game at half time, I'm backing in that we're going to run over the top of them. If they get out to a quick start, that's going to be the issue. But if we're in that game at half time, it's going to be all ours. And I'm tipping Richmond to win by 28 points in the end as a result of that. Norm Smith medalist?
For me, Norm Smith medalist will be Trent Cotchin.
If he's on and he has a good game, I'll say Dan Rioli.
I'm going to say Dustin Martin to just complete his trophy cabinet for the year and just keep rolling on.
He would have won everything then, wouldn't he? Is there anything he hasn't?
I don't think he won the Ages Player of the Year. I think that went to Dangerfield. But he's won everything else, including the SEN Tyre Power Player of the Year. And he might, and depending on the Gary Ayres Medal, which is the other one to be awarded, but he certainly, tonight, Tuesday night, is going to go and accept the AFL Coaches Association Player of the Year. Gentlemen, fantastic to talk and discuss a grand final. I didn't think we'd be in this position, but get out and open training is Friday, 9:45 a.m. I believe they're hitting the track. SEN's going to be broadcasting their live, so get along and then go straight from there to the parade, which will be coming in. I never thought I'd be seeing our team in a parade, but it's fantastic to get out and support them. Paint the town yellow and black.
Can I also mention
that
I am SEN's representative at Punt Road on Sunday?
Oh, for the after match.
Yep, for the presentation of the team and all that sort of stuff. So we'll get heaps of interviews, and that's going to be a fun day on Sunday.
I'm looking forward to it. And if you were unlucky and you didn't get a ticket for this week, you know, don't pay through the absolute nose. But if you can, If you can find a way to get a ticket, good on you. Go along, support your team, because it ain't going to be like last weekend. That was something special. We're going to have there's going to be, you know, 30,000 for actual fans there, and the rest are going to be corporate. So we need the actual fans to be cheering as loudly and as you know brutally as possible, again within reason. But you know, just turn it up. Do what we did on the weekend, gentlemen. It is Tiger time. Go, go Tigers!
Like the Tiger of old, we're strong and we're bold, we're from Tiger.